The recording has officially begun. Hello, hello. Happy 2023, all, and welcome to LHON Live. We've been doing this a while, so I'm going to give you the spiel that many of you have heard before, but if we have any new folks, I heard some names at the start that I wasn't sure if I've heard many times before, so at least some fresh-ish faces, or voices, I should say, if not completely fresh. So maybe this spiel is a little new for some of you, but my name is Andy Marks. I'm one of your LHON Live co-hosts, joined tonight by Jessica Loomer. You there, Jess?
Hi. Yeah, hi, all.
I'm here in New Jersey, and I believe, Jessica, you're there in Denver, probably, maybe?
Yeah, it's really cold, Denver, okay. Colorado.
Wonderful, wonderful. Jessica and I have been hosting this call for many years at this point in time. Back in June of 2014, she and I had the pleasure of meeting. We actually met our former co-host, who's here tonight as well, Maria. Is here too. And the three of us met in June of 2014 on what was our first LHON conference there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we quickly realized that it's really cool to hear from amazing experts, and it's really cool to hear from doctors, and it's really cool to hear about all the cool assistive technology that the conference allows you to hear about. But one of the biggest benefits that we realized, and honestly, I'll speak for myself and say was surprised by, was just how cool it was to meet other people who have this shared experience, that we don't know each other. We are normally used to living a very unique existence in our small world, in our small communities, where we are usually the person who has LHON. But at that conference, we are not the only one. We share that experience. And although our experience is unique on a day-to-day level, it's extremely shared by a lot of those folks. I've heard from many sighted individuals or friends or family members who go to those conferences and realize, wow, it's crazy to see how similar these people that I've never met do things to the way that my loved ones do, whether it's their spouse, their partner, their son, daughter. And those experiences and interactions are just really cool. So after realizing that in June of 2014, we thought, you know, it would be really cool if we get to kind of tap into this cool benefit more frequently than once a year. So rather than flying across the country several times throughout the year, we started this conference call in August of 2014, a couple months later. And then we've been doing it once a month since then. So with that, since I left everyone unmuted, who wants to tell me how many calls we've been doing? This is your first trivia question of the night. Someone knows the answer to this question.
Well,
Wayne, what is it? I heard you speak up.
Last month was 132, so I think this month is probably 212, right?
That's close.
So close.
We did make a little snafu last time in terms of what the number was, and I announced that last time that it wasn't our big 100th anniversary, but it was something different. Does someone actually know what it is? I feel like Wayne actually knows. Do you know what it is, Wayne?
I don't know, 102 or 103?
Yep. It's 102. So we'll see. I mean, maybe I'll sprinkle some more trivia questions in tonight. I was thinking about that when I was on my Spirit Airlines flight last week that sat on the tarmac for an hour, and the flight attendant started asking us trivia questions. So who knows? Maybe I'll give you some more. But with that, Jessica, I want to go ahead and welcome you and see how you're doing. How's it going?
Thank you. Oh, it's doing wonderful. I love the trivia question idea. I'm like, let's start that. But no, I'm doing fantastic. I'm just kind of getting back into the swing of things after being like what we call dark, for quite some time, for 2 weeks of vacation time. So it was really great to kind of have a getaway, and yeah, just kind of getting back into it. When all of your passwords don't work and you're trying to figure out how to like work at a computer again after 2 weeks, it's amazing how quick you forget, but all is well over here. It's very snowy, but my wonderful neighbors here in Denver have all shoveled my sidewalks. So I did not have to trek up with my 49-pound suitcase up the snowy driveway because they shoveled it for me. So I'm like, gotta love good neighbors. But yeah, what about you? How are you?
That's awfully nice of your neighbors. I'm doing pretty well. I've traveled a little bit. I alluded to being on a plane a little bit. So yeah, I spent some time last month. I guess I was in, I was in Hoboken last call, but then in the meantime, I've been to North Carolina and then Florida, and now I'm back here. So I enjoyed a little travel over the holidays, but happy to be back home in my own place a little bit and enjoying life here. Like you, getting back into work is never fun. I was having some major Sunday scaries and then Monday scaries and then Tuesday scaries this week. Yeah. So, but life is good. I can't complain too much trying to think about the new year. A coworker of mine actually sent me a booklet because she is, she does this retreat every year. And every year, like the first weekend after what is New Year's, she and her closest girlfriends, and I don't know how many years they've been doing this, they like go to a retreat out at some cabin, and the three of them fill out some booklet about looking back at the prior year and forward to the new year. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's either the coolest story ever or the beginning to a horror movie. I'm not sure which, but either way, I mean, it's a story to tell, and I thought it was a cool idea. So maybe I'll fill that booklet out this weekend. I haven't decided. You all can.
She gave you an empty booklet.
Well, it's a website where you can either print out a booklet or you can do it virtually. She says doing it from a computer kind of defeats the purpose the way they like to do it. But yeah, I mean, if I did it, I would probably do it virtually. We can talk about how we might do something like that, given our unique situations, if we want to. And with that, I'll go ahead and kind of share our approach to the call this evening for lots of you. So a lot of you are used to several different formats we do on these calls. There was a point in time where we had a guest speaker every month who was actually talking about a specific topic. Then we actually ran out of topics, but we didn't run out of speakers yet. So we started talking to speakers every month, but they didn't necessarily interact with specific topics. Eventually we ran out of speakers, and for over a year now, Jessica and I have been pulling topics from the Facebook group. We have realized and heard from folks that sometimes those topics aren't relevant to folks here. So we really want to start crowdsourcing or passing around a hat metaphorically to this group as we talk about different things to see what folks are interested in talking about here, and or just opening it up for folks earlier on the call, because we know those parts of the calls tend to be some of the most lively, some of the most interesting. That said, Jessica and I will continue to bring at least a topic or two to talk about if we need to lean on that, but we don't want that to be the main focus of the call if there are other things folks want to talk about. So with that, really, if folks have questions, I want you to feel compelled to bring those up at the beginning when you're introducing yourselves or throughout the call if there are things you'd like to talk about. The only thing that I would like to remind everyone, which I haven't done tonight yet, is we have some very high level basic ground rules in terms of what types of topics we encourage talking about and which ones we may decide are less well suited for this type of call. And those principally are just topics that we're not experts on. So they could be employment related topics, legal questions, scientific or medical questions. We're not doctors. We're not lawyers. We're not your bosses. So all of those things, while we're happy to give you our advice and you can ask any question you want, there may come a time where we point you toward experts instead of this call. But with that exception, like, we really want to talk about whatever you all would like to talk about. So I'll give it a second here to see if anyone wants to bring up something. I know at least one topic was already sent to us from someone on the call, so we're probably going to cover that at some point in time. But otherwise, are there things that you all want to talk about? I really want to give you all a chance to voice those topics.
This is Kimberly Fetterman. I'll start.
Ooh, perfect.
I'm wondering if anybody is going to be attending the Washington National Convention that is coming up in just a few weeks. Because there are some, with the NFB, there's some three different topics that are really important to the blind community. And I was just kind of wondering what everybody's thoughts are about it.
Yeah, well, Kimberly, do you mind, just because I myself am ignorant, I'm sure others would benefit as well, what are the three major topics you plan on being covered there, or that are planning to be covered there?
Absolutely. So the first one is accessibility on the internet. I don't know how many people have gone to a website, and for me, I have to use JAWS. And when it says button instead of buy your green beans here or purchase your order now, it's not accessible.
So right.
One of the first ones. The second one is medical devices being accessible. And the third one is something new, and I'm not 100% sure what it's about. But what I think it is, so I just lost my vision 3 years ago, and I am on Social Security. However, I just got a job. And
congratulations.
Thank you.
Yay. Yes. Although I am choosing to work part-time right now because of my Social Security benefits and trying to figure out how to balance everything out at this time. But what they want to propose is a way where we can make as much money as we want. And then it will slowly, I don't know, maybe eliminate our Social Security money that's coming in. Because if we can get these amazing jobs and work full time, then we don't need to worry about that limit of money that you have to make, or you can make rather. And again, that's something that's new. So I'm not totally up to date on that, but those are the three topics that I believe that the NFB are going to represent, and hopefully we'll get some of them passed for sure.
Yeah, so these are proposals that they're bringing to the full NFB to decide on the NFB's position on, it sounds like, maybe, Kimberly?
The NFB is a resolution that they've I'm not sure I'm saying this right either, but last year the NFB decided that these are passionate things that they want to see go through the government. And the NFB is already standing by these, and they've written out proposals, and maybe somebody that's a little bit more educated than me might be able to expound on it. But
no, that sounds great. It sounds like at the very least they're providing an update on how this positioning is going, maybe
yes. How
the lobbying is going, maybe
yes.
In
I'm not more educated on this,
capital.
But you're
Cindy,
on the right
yes,
track.
You are right.
No, this is Candace.
Oh, Candace, sorry.
Somebody else. But basically, I think you're on the right track. It would be us going to speak to our representatives in D.C. For Washington seminar. And we're just, you know, everyone around the country. It's that time. So, and then, I'm sorry, did you say somebody else spoke up that knows more?
No, you just, what your voice sounded like Cindy's did, because I know she was talking about NFB before. But so, no.
Oh, sorry.
You're spot on though. It's just updating the full NFB to garner support, and you're right. Encourage folks
to
speak to their own representatives.
Law.
Exactly.
Yeah, to pass it into law. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
No, Kimberly, thank you for bringing that up, because I think it's good for us to be aware of those types of things. Whether we all make it to those meetings or conferences or symposiums or not, these are things that affect all of us within the blind community, and it's good to be knowledgeable on those types of things. So whether we're able to make it or not, it's good to be aware of what's happening there, because whether you make it there or not, you can still speak to your representatives. You still have access
exactly.
to those folks.
Yes. So, you have a voice no matter where you are. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for bringing it up, Kimberly.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Anyone else have a question or something that maybe they dealt with this month that they would like to ask this group for? There's a wealth of knowledge, I can tell you, on this call in terms of folks who live very similar lives to all of us. So if you have any questions from things you dealt with around the holidays, around New Year's Eve, or even just in thinking about the year ahead, any questions that may come to your mind?
So this is Matt. So you and Jessica both traveled you pointed out a couple times that you traveled on planes during your time off. What assistive technology did you find most useful? And I ask that specifically in the wake of, you know, so like Microsoft Soundscape is going away and a lot of companies are getting R&D budgets cut. But yet they're still going to be expected to be ADA compliant and things like that. So I'm just kind of curious what you found most useful, like in airports specifically, whether it was Aira or Seeing AI or Be My Eyes or whatever.
Well, you seem pretty knowledgeable. Jessica, I'll take you first. I'll be honest. At first, I thought you were going to say in the wake of all the flight cancellations, which was a bigger issue. But, well, Jessica, I'll let you take this one first.
I'm like, that you seem like you can answer your own question. I'm like, that sounds fantastic. I crowdsource, full confession. So I know Denver's airport really well, just because I've lived here and traveled out of Denver's airport really well. So I know that, but, I know I need to get off at like whatever specific terminal. And then when I need to find my gate, I honestly ask, I just ask a lot of people along the way. And people are really friendly. They always kind of help me out. And most of the time they're like, oh, I'm headed that way. I'll go with you. Or I'm super early too. Or I actually had a bartender once take me to my gate. Like, people are really friendly. People really are, but I do travel with a cane 100% of the time. I travel everywhere from the cane, from the time that I leave my house until the time that I'm like at my final destination. So I've done that. That was actually what I did all Christmas. I sometimes use like the red cap or things like that. And honestly, they take too long. And I was a girl on a mission. So I just crowdsourced this past December and it was pretty fun. You meet a lot of interesting people. And oftentimes people will say like, oh, I know one of my so-and-sos, they're actually visually impaired too. Like, and they actually are the ones that do pretty well with like description and things like that. Or, someone will come up to me and be like, you can kind of see, huh? And I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see. They're like, can I help you with something? And I'm like, yeah, like which way? And I'll kind of point what I need. Or I've had, a family of all probably like 6, 7, 8 year olds. They're from headed to somewhere in the South.
Family of all 6, 7, and 8 year olds. Wow.
Well, I mean, like the kids were that age. And the kids kept saying, mom, what's that? Mom, what's that? And she goes, well, you should ask her. And so I literally like just like got down on my knee and like chatted with all the kids and we talked about what blind means. So it was a full adventure and I got to have all of that just because I think I just went rogue. So I don't know if I'm not the good example, but that's what I do.
This is Bo, but I totally agree with that. I think if you feel comfortable sort of using your cane and kind of moving a little free, airports are you can kind of always tell, I think, which way the flow is. So there's sort of like you're in the lane or you're getting off towards the terminal. And I think just doing the like hop on the various people and be like, which way is 72 or whatever, and then kind of ask again in 100 yards or whenever somebody's like, no, all right, here's the end of my road, then you just kind of find another person. And I think it works, you know, pretty well, especially on your departure airport, just if you end up just being someone that kind of like, normally I fly out of this airport with my spouse or something, and this time I'm going alone, you still know the airport or something. I kind of think that for a lot of us, that probably works better, Jessica, than the waiting for somebody for like a super long time.
I'll point out, Bo, you said you're in Upper East Side. Is that right? You're in Manhattan?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I would say that advice is pretty Manhattan. And that's, I say with tons of love. I live here in Hoboken and I'm over in Manhattan all the time, several times a week. And that is basically how I get around the grid of Manhattan. Like just asking, because there are not red caps in a city. And you can get around by saying, hey, do you know which ways uptown, which way is downtown? And then that's all you need. And then you're going to count streets until you eventually get somewhere and say, hey, just someone nearby, this is 72, right? And someone will say yes, because I'm holding a cane, and people become nice when you're holding a cane. And I think that advice is great. Jessica, I wouldn't downplay how great your advice is. I think that if we have some new folks here on the call tonight, sometimes there takes some adjustment to, being comfortable carrying a cane and having that comfort level with that. There have been times where when I'm holding a cane that you are, I'll use this word carefully, but I actually do mean it. There have been times where I've been verbally assaulted because someone knows I am holding a cane. And so I understand, and I say that only to provide understanding to folks who are not comfortable carrying a cane. But I would say in places like an airport, I can't downplay how valuable it is to have those folks around to help you. I, unlike Jessica, probably rely on a red cap just because I think it's, I don't know, I like it. Sometimes if there's a long TSA line like there was over the holidays, it means you get to skip some of that. It means sometimes you have someone subtly asking for a tip for 30 minutes, which is weird. At the end of the day, I think there's so many different ways. You listed, and I forget who the original question came from, but you mentioned Aira, Be My Eyes. For those who don't know, those are both applications you can use from any smartphone. one that requires some payment, although not often in most airports. I don't know that there's any charges in any airports now for IRA, but Be My Eyes is always free from volunteers. So both of these are applications that rely on your camera from your phone for an individual to basically provide guidance for you through the phone. So all of those, I think, are great. In addition to just the old fashioned way of looking kind of lost and being willing to ask when someone sees you.
Matt, do you travel often? And is there something else you would recommend as well?
I do. I mean, not as I haven't just recently on in airplanes recently as much as I was, but I travel a lot on trains and stuff like that. But yeah, I definitely agree with the crowd surfing thing. Just like asking people, especially at airports or larger areas that have public restrooms. And I'll even tell someone like, hey, can you listen for the screams in case I go to the wrong place? And you know, someone will get a kick out of that or whatever. And so they'll be like, oh, let me help you out.
Matt, it's Bo again, but one train tip, since I'm in New York and you're in Philly and I've gone back and forth between the two. In Philadelphia, they like list the trains super early. So you can kind of use that sort of trick to just sort of get to the right place pretty easy. But in New York, they always like list the train like right as it arrives. So I found actually the like red cap kind of thing or whatever it's called for the Penn Station in New York is actually super helpful because they'll take you down sort of the back way before the train even gets there and sort of get you all set up, but rather than have to get stuck in the mad rush if you ever do trains in New York that way.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was shocked. I actually had a SEPTA rail person that walked me all the way to my platform the other day, which was astonishing for SEPTA, which
that's awesome.
usually customer service isn't their forte. But it was great.
No, I love that. I mean, especially this time of year, I think that's a question we've gotten tons of times over the years. And I can't say there have been new services that have come up, but a lot of these tried and true things still work. Matt, you mentioned how things like Soundscape and others are potentially going away, or more than potentially. Aspects of them are definitely going away. And that will be more trying for some folks. I think it's disappointing that some of those services are going away because it's been really exciting to see some of these large companies not only favor accessibility at times in their general products, but even invest, as you mentioned, in R&D on products specific to a disabled community or a blind community or visually impaired or hard of hearing or all of these different communities. I've been really intrigued by the product.
Yeah. And another thing that I've found about traveling is a lot of airlines, just even to check in at all, are requiring you to download their app and then check in using the app, which it's their own, you know. So for every time you use a different airline, now you have a different app on your phone and you have to get used to the buttons. And someone was mentioning earlier unlabeled buttons. And there are still some airlines that are requiring you to use their app to check in. And at the same time, the buttons are unlabeled, which is a little frustrating.
I actually don't think they can require you to download the app to do that. I think that's an accessibility accommodation that you can ask for something different. I actually I traveled the Southwest and then switched quickly to American this past weekend, because of the chaos I've never flown American really. And so everyone's like, download the app. And I quickly went and got a paper ticket. So that's definitely a combination. Airlines and especially transportation they have to adhere to kind of a higher standard than digital accessibility just because of transportation. So I think you could hold pretty strong to a lot of legal obligations they have. So I think you're safe on that one so far.
Yeah,
especially their app sucks.
I haven't tried challenging it, but you know, like I have flown Spirit and Frontier and some of the less expensive airlines, and they definitely are examples of ones that charge you to print a ticket. It's like a $15 or $20 fee if you go to check in at the counter.
This is Kimberly. Right. Oh, I would challenge it. That's not okay, man.
Yeah,
I've flown American and Southwest. Yeah, no. Mm-mm.
at the same time, I think that's worth challenging. And yet I would understand in the frenzy of trying to make it to a flight, doing what you got to do to get to the flight. But everyone saying that you are able to challenge it is right in the sense that you're probably in the right, but sometimes mm-hmm. being right doesn't make you to your flight on time. So I understand every perspective there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I agree. After challenge, though. Get your flight and then challenge.
Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned that Soundscapes is going away because of the budget cut?
Well, Soundscape, I don't know why, but I know that a lot of larger companies are dealing with research and development budget cuts. And it has some of the tax rebates, credits that they were getting previously are going away starting this year and next. And then each year starting this year, the tax incentives will decrease for these companies that have these big R&D budgets like that.
Wow. That's sad.
Yeah.
But thank you for sharing that. I definitely appreciate that.
Any other questions or topics that folks are interested in this time? I'll go ahead and bring up one that was sent to us before the call, Jessica. And if someone wants to make themselves known, or Jessica, if you want to correct my memory of this question, it's basically in regards to just the holiday season in general, that there is a time when, as we spend more time in groups, whether it be around a holiday, opening gifts, celebrating something, maybe there were fireworks around New Year's Eve, that this person basically expresses that after having lost their vision, they find this even more mentally taxing, or they find themselves more fatigued after the fact, and they really have to just come back and rest for a dozen hours or more, which would not be normally typical. But just finding that kind of commotion and activity and frenzy of just energy around them, especially taxing now that they don't have as much vision as they once did. And the question is, do we all relate to that? I think there, and I'll speak for my own self right now to answer the question, is like, yes, certainly. I think we all have certain instances that probably bring out that same response. For some people, it will be exactly what the question asker described. And for others, it may be being in a grocery store, which sometimes I find kind of visually taxing. Or it could be just being outdoors when you're used to being indoors. I find that taxing sometimes because my vision isn't trying to see things really far away until I go outside. And then it seems to highlight my lack of vision more than when I'm in a building where maybe the furthest wall ever for me is, say, 20, 30 feet. These are all examples of places where I find myself more aware of my vision loss and find it more taxing, or find myself more fatigued after them sometimes at times. I know physical activity is brought up in that same vein at times. But Jessica, do you have thoughts there or others?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Especially like, I would say it's probably more taxing on me for like kind of trying to like remember who everybody is. And then I feel like it's like a memory game every single time. And it's with family, or if it's even like, it was definitely hard going into like a new work environment and things like that, where you had to like, who are you again? Who is this? And like, I know I recognize the names or the recognize the voices, like it's my own family, you know, but still it's just like, who is that? And what is that person? And like, trying not to like really come across that, like, I have no idea who you are, but like also who are you again? And it's just like, that to me was really tough because it was a constant memory game all the time. And then people change clothes and then you have to remember who it is all over again. I'm like, oh gosh. So like, that's probably was the biggest thing for me. And then lights, like if I'm super tired or anything and it's super bright out, like the lights began to bother me more. And so I think I had one conversation with, I had coffee with someone with my eyes closed. I was like, really sorry, the sun's super bright and I'm just having a tough time. And so, but yeah, it's a lot, you know. Oh, we can hear you. What, did you want to chime in and say something? Ooh, we can hear you though, if you wanted to say something. But no, I just wanted to totally agree that And I think it's a lot, especially holidays. Like there's from Thanksgiving all the way to New Year's, it's kind of jam packed. And so it's definitely overwhelming. So I'll agree. Anybody else?
Jessica, that's so funny because I was just thinking when you were talking about people changing their clothes, I was just thinking about my nephew's voice changing. And all of a sudden he sounded more like my husband or more like my brother-in-law. And it's like those things you have to like fine tune into when you can't see. It's just, yeah, it takes a lot of energy.
Right. And you're like, who is that? And they're like, oh, that's, I'm like, oh my God, you grew up. Like, when did that happen?
Yes. Well, it's something you don't have to think about when you're sighted, right? It's like, you see the person, you know, the person. Like, yeah.
I think around the holidays, it's definitely different, after vision loss, at family events. And, you know, if you don't see certain family regularly, like you do with the people that live in your household. So then you go to a family event and people realize, I guess, what you're going through. And so that kind of, their reactions kind of throw you off because you're just living your life every day. And then they don't realize your situation. So that's been interesting for me around the holidays with losing my vision for only 2 years now. And then it's hard trying to remember who's where. And I'm like, I'm sorry, who are you? You know, because you don't see them all the time. So that's been more difficult for me.
It was also super tough because when I went back home to Phoenix, my parents moved to a pretty kind of remote-ish area and I literally had to ask for rides all over again. Whereas in Denver, I don't have to ask for rides because it's pretty accessible. And so I literally feel like I reverted back to high school and I'm not high school age. And I felt like I had to like, hey, can you give me a ride? Or my dad would call me, which I mean, most wonderful thing. He called me when I was at dinner with my friends and was like, do you want a ride? And I was like, no, like we're still at dinner. And so that was kind of tough during the holidays to kind of revert, especially traveling. You don't have like your normal transportation or like your normal routines and things like that. But, you know, it's just adjustment.
I can definitely sympathize with the memory game comparison since with the extra time over the holidays, I started running with an additional running group, and I think most of the people in the group just didn't believe that I was that I was visually impaired since I was, you know, I had a guide with me, of course, but we don't use a tether. And so it was, you know, I was trying to remember people's voices from this new group of 20 people, and that was a bit of a challenge. So,
right, especially with everyone wearing almost a similar outfit as they run or something like that.
Yep.
I find myself having that same thought there could be holiday activities, but really just any social activity where I certainly prefer when we are around a table and everyone remains in one location.
Oh, stationary. Yeah,
we are in a networking situation where everyone's going to change order constantly. Yeah.
Yep.
But I don't know.
No, I was just going to say, I don't mind at all asking someone for their name several times.
Right.
trying to remember their voice.
I always sometimes say this was just me before too. So my memory, you know, you never know. I don't know, but I guess there's an additional reason I can say at least to not remember everyone. I heard you were saying you were in the running group. Did you? Are you in the Achilles International?
Yeah, I do that. I do that once a week, like with Achilles, and then I run in a couple other groups too.
Okay.
Are you involved with Achilles also?
I run, but I haven't joined them, and I know I should. you know, it's better that way. So I ran a 5K on my own, about a month ago, and, my mom came, picked me up, and they closed the streets down due to a Christmas parade. So she couldn't get to me. And she said, I'm at the corner of, you know, Williams and, you know, May or something. And I had to figure out where she was using apps on my phone in the dark. And
yeah. I'm going to go ahead and practice what we're preaching here and ask what your name is again. I'm sorry.
Oh, my name's Rob Packard.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Rob.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. So it was an interesting way of being as blind as I could and trying to figure out if you can use these apps to find someone that's 8 blocks away sitting. She was confused and didn't know where to go, and I didn't know how to tell her. So we just used the map, and I actually navigated right to her. But yeah. It can be tough getting around. If I had a running partner with me, it would have been a little safer. So that's a good idea.
That's definitely something that you did a 5K on your own, though. That's awesome.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Speaking of big accomplishments like that, and like in the vein of, LHON, and it doesn't have to be LHON related, but I think that's a part of what we all go through with our lives in general. And I'm not a proponent of this word necessarily, but does anyone have any New Year's resolutions or goals that they're trying to accomplish in that vein this year? They don't have to be running. I know I'm not going to run any this year, so that can be my goal. But does anyone have anything that can be related to that, or they can be related to other things that they're interested in sharing? Rob's going to start running with Achilles.
Oh yeah, that's one. I've been playing piano more. More music. I got a couple keyboards and a microphone, and I'm going to try to do some more with that. You know,
it's wonderful.
Because the school, blind school that I graduated from over in Kalamazoo, Michigan, Stevie Wonder graduated from that school. So they had a couple pianos, so kind of got that bug in me.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Andy, it's Megan.
Hey, Megan.
So my little one that is kind of private, but not so private now, is that I'm trying to embrace my blindness.
Okay.
So to use my cane as much as I can, to ask for help as much as I can, to ask for no help when I don't want help, and to use apps as much as I want.
I love that.
I love that.
That's really cool, Megan. And I hope you get on some ski slopes this year too.
Oh, scheduled. Talk to them today.
Wonderful.
Nice. Do you do anything? I don't know where your vision is at exactly, but you've skied before?
I have. I skied before I was, I lost my vision, and I have skied in the last 4 years since I lost my vision.
Do you do anything to, you know, avoid poles and trees and things?
I go through adaptive schools. So you research what the mountain has, and then you figure out, you know, how to work with them. So whether it be a ski school or an adaptive school, and then you usually ski behind a guide or with a guide, whether it be just, you know, talking out loud or with an earbud, you know, talking to each other. And usually my husband goes with me. Actually, my husband always goes with me and is my behind person to make sure that nobody runs into me.
There are lots of really cool programs like that. I will shout out for anyone who's looking for to travel to ski specifically, the National Ability Center out in Park City, Utah, is of the places I've skied since losing my vision, the one that I would recommend the most. It is certainly the most affordable after qualifying even before any scholarships are provided, and they grant scholarships very liberally. It's a place that I would really, really recommend. I've skied there last year, probably 4 or 5 days, and had an absolute blast. I've skied at Beaver Creek as well. They have an adaptive program there that is great, but it is quite costly.
Steamboat too, Andy, is absolutely free.
Wonderful. Yeah.
No, in terms of rentals places, too. Yeah.
Wow. I assume it's worth a call ahead to call the lodge and ask what they have. So.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely varies between, I've gone from everything of paying full boat to just having it, you know, basically given to you because of the disability, which, you know, then you, I love to give a donation. So, but it really does vary.
Okay. Yeah. I had an archaic, I don't know if it's archaic or not, but an idea that I'd put a flashing strobe type light on a skier that I'd follow and just have that as a guide, but ask them not to go through forests and woods and things. I don't know, but
yeah, I mean, there's certainly right colors can help out there. I would say having skied following a guide and having skied with a guide actually behind me wearing a headset, I certainly benefited the most from having him behind me where he could watch me in real time. As long as we were wearing headsets, that certainly benefited me, which, now I sometimes would even follow a friend or something like that, but in terms of the actual talented, I should say professional, I prefer them being in my ear is the most important place for them to be until the headset starts to die and it goes on low battery, which is the only worrisome part of that.
And Rob, this is Lissa. There's another, along the lines of your strobe light idea. They do make, bibs, you know, for guides and for blind skiers, depending on how you feel about it. Like Jeremy was absolutely not interested in wearing a big neon, bib that, you know, it's orange neon and says blind skier. He's like absolutely not wearing it, which is totally his choice. Respect that, but you can, and it can keep people away from you if you want that to happen. But I wore one that said like guide, and it's also, you know, big neon, big bold letters, and you just tie it over your outfit and it says guide or guide for VI or blind VI guide, whatever, which was weird because I had that and there was no person I was ostensibly guiding because he looked excited and my husband would go in front and he would follow my husband as best he could. And then I'd be behind, but I figured I was doing like Megan said, like her husband did, just like, you know, in the back, keep people away. But again, those things exist and can be purchased if you find that helpful.
And Lissa, it's actually really difficult to purchase them right now. I mean, if we can dig them up, we totally will, but I'm trying to get them for my whole like team that's going skiing, not team, but like my family that's going skiing with us.
Just your because team, Megan.
If anyone's skiing with me, I just want somebody to have a bib. Like I want somebody to have a penny. So.
Yeah. I mean, and to your point, I mean, for anyone who feels comfortable, I certainly encourage it as well. Like we talked about in the airport, it's just one of those things like carrying a cane in the airport where it causes people to sometimes treat you differently. Yes, going down the slope, but also even in the lift line or something like that. Who's to say you won't maybe get to go in front of some folks, which isn't awful. Not that I endorse taking advantage of folks, but there are some things that are nice.
And there's other perks too, like when we would buy our, at least at Mammoth in California where we would do most of our skiing, when we would buy our lift tickets, Jeremy would pay full price. And then as his guide, it was free because I was ostensibly there to be his guide service. So they provide the guide, you know, I think some nonprofit gives those passes free. So it's worth checking that out. There's a caveat. I mean, I couldn't go off and ski and leave him alone. You know, I had to be close to him. They check that on the passes. But if someone is your guide, you know, you can see if that's available.
You couldn't do the jumps and all the stuff that you usually do because.
Yeah, it's usually like around the same hours. It's like they cut off the pass, you know, this newfangled technology.
Yeah, so this thing that someone gave me, I don't know if it's able to be seen by any, but it kind of lights up and then it has a little flash. So I figured I don't know. Anything that makes it easier to be seen yourself, or to see others, you know, something like that. It's the same with running outside, of course.
Right.
having the more flashing, the better. And folks have said, well, that's really great for you to have. And I'm like, it's actually great for any runner or anyone who's outside at night for
yes.
It's just a safety thing, really.
Megan, I was just going to say, I could look to see if we just order them a little bit bigger, you could look to see about getting guide bibs from the running stores. There's one that like one of the main running people all buy from. I have no idea what it is off the top of my head, but I could text him quick and ask him.
I will get back to you on that because I feel like I ordered probably like a dozen from Big Sky because they said they could get them for me. And I was like, yes, I will buy them all. But yes, definitely. I'll reach out to you, Jessica.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you.
As we approach the top of the hour, I want to be able to turn the recording off in case folks have questions they would like to ask once the recording is turned off. But before I do that, are there any other questions that folks want to make sure are included on the recorded portion of the call?
I have a question around the travel, and it has to do with Uber. Are there any tricks that people could share regarding Uber or Lyft?
Ooh, I can share my favorite and then I'll hand it over. And I've used this every single time when I get to the Denver airport and it's worked 100% and I feel like it's above and beyond. Once it's booked and it's, I don't know, a couple minutes away, I send them a message and I tell them what I'm wearing and I tell them that I'm visually impaired and they literally park their car in the line to come pick me up in Uber and it's obviously pretty busy. And they get out of their car and they come find me every time. And I'm like knocking on wood. And it is the most kindest, thoughtful, and more than expected. But they, because I fully describe what I'm wearing every single time, and I have gigantic red suitcases, so it does help me out too. And I always just like, I'm wearing this. I have a red suitcase. I'm visually impaired. Can you look for me? They come and find me. I always thank them. And they're like, your description is what made me find you. And so they're like, yeah, we're happy to do it. I would recommend that.
If I'm being picked up anywhere, if I'm not at like a physical address, I'm, always, always.
Who was asking?
I'm sorry, who was the person that asked this question?
Sorry, I'm technically challenged. Paul.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
You bet.
No, I would say all of the pointers that have been mentioned are great. I just to point out one thing for safety reasons that a lot of people will talk about in addition to describing what you're wearing. Maybe when they approach you, ask them instead of their name, ask them who they are meant to pick up. Or if you know their name from the app, you can ask them to tell you their name before you're getting in a stranger's car because they said they are Uber. Just pointing that out is something that's often helpful as well, just for general safety reasons, not necessarily even vision related. Since seeing license plates is more difficult for us. I know a lot of folks would check a license plate and that's hard for me to do. So
I would add to that I can't see cars and I can't see the color car. I can't see the type of car. I can't see the license plate, but I would go through Ira and you can get an agent on the phone and they can actually go through not Uber, but I think they can go through Lyft with you and they can access your app on the phone and help you that way. And they can actually access your camera on the phone as well and figure out the car, license plate, et cetera, and actually stay with you or at least on the line with you to make sure that you get to your destination safely. So that's really what I've relied on.
Love that.
It's Maria. I'll put in my two quick cents too, is that I always, if I'm in a shopping center or whatnot, I will always go to a place where there's not a lot of people and I'm in front of a really obvious retail store. And then that's the store even though I wasn't there, perhaps that wasn't what I was doing, where I was doing business. I will put that address in the app and I will stand in front of that store or location. And again, instead of being maybe in front of a supermarket where there's people with carts and what all, I'll go over to, you know, Petco and there's really nobody there. So I know a driver's going to find me a lot easier without crowds of people. So if that's possible, that's one hint too. And honestly, a lot of times I don't tell them I'm visually impaired just because I feel weird about it sometimes. I may tell them once I'm in the car, but sometimes I don't tell them. I've had good and bad experiences with people not telling me their name and demanding I say my name. I've had people say, well, if you're blind, how come you walk to the car? You know, so I've had some real ignorant drivers, but very few and far between for the most part. My experience with Uber or Lyft has been great. And people are just more curious than anything if you do tell them. But, you know, the location of pickup, I've had more people say like, wow, you know, I tell them what I did and they're like, wow, thank you so much. It was a lot easier to find you. And I have had one driver where I messaged I was, you know, leaving a workout and I had dark, you know, workout pants on and this and I'm legally blind. So you'll have to find me. She actually chastised me because she said she read the message while she was driving and almost rear-ended another car. And I'm like, and that's my problem. So, you know, I think it could go both. Now that again, that's the only time someone has said that to me. But, for the most part, I would say 95% of the time you get super accommodating drivers. They're willing to give you their name. And they also, you know, be very, when they drop you off, I've had people more times than none say, do you want me to help you get to the door or walk, can you get up to your door or the next location or whatever it is. So what, you know, people really do want to help, but you know, finding a less crowded location, if at all possible, does help too.
The two lessons.
I learned from, go ahead.
Is if it's going to be a crazy, wild, busy area, pre-schedule the Uber ahead of time. Cause I've found myself stranded because like it was University of Michigan game day and everything was booked up. And then the other is that I didn't update my credit card when I switched over and I couldn't access the app. So just pre-scheduling, planning ahead and making sure that they're all working. It's good to know that Ira would help set up Lyft though. I hadn't thought of that. So it's a good idea.
Really quick.
Another thing for safety.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Maria.
Jessica, while we're on the topic, I find that Uber is pretty accessible as far as with voiceover, but then Lyft changed their whole little app. And I don't know if anyone finds it to be not as accessible anymore. Anyone prefer one over the other or find one's more accessible than the other? Anyone?
I use Uber all the time. I think, Kim, you use Lyft or you use both, but I use Uber all the time.
I use both.
Yeah, I don't know. Lyft seems to have a map pop up, and every time I'm swiping, it's just giving me weird street names. I'm like, no, move down. I don't want the map. Maybe I just have to get used to it again, but it seems like it just they just revamped it or something.
They did change the screen a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like,
when you touch it, the touch cues don't behave exactly the same way.
Okay, not just me. Okay, thanks, Lyft. Because sometimes Lyft is actually cheaper. But I will agree with what Rob says, pre-scheduling, because I've been stuck when it's been late and I've been stuck and I can't get a ride. But sometimes also the pre-scheduling can be triple the cost. Again, I don't know what the deal is with that. But, so it just takes some getting used to, but once you get used to rideshare, Uber, Lyft, and you just kind of own it, I'm super grateful for it. I mean, really grateful for it.
It's changed my life.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yes.
I can tell you in 100%. In where I live, cabs were unreliable and we have no mass transportation. I mean, you know, so we're very good.
Well, a lot of people I've had say they're afraid because you can't see the person, you don't know what they're doing, you know, they could drive you off to who knows where and you'll never know, you know, And, you know, once you kind of get over that fear, and know that, you know, it's legit and the app's on and there are the safety, protocols too. And you can let people know, hey, I'm in Lyft or I'm in Uber, or in Uber, and they, you know, they know where you are. Then, you know, it's again, just you get in, you own it like it's your car, and, very, very like minimal times I've put in the wrong destination. I've realized, oh my gosh, they're making way too many turns. It's taking too long and it was my fault. And they're more than happy to change the help you change the destination on the app and things like that. So, you know, the drivers are, you know, the drivers are very accommodating. And I've met some really great people. But sometimes, you know, you do get the one or two that you just have to kind of work around, if you will. But, it really does give you some independence 100%.
Maria, isn't there also like, possibilities to put in like an emergency contact so that they can follow you? They can follow your like location.
Yeah, I think I put in, you know, it's part of their safety, protocol, and you go in there and then you can actually let somebody know, I think via text message, that you're in an Uber, and it gives them, I think they can follow you and
I think they actually can see you on a map. Yeah.
It's called share my ride. And then you just
share my ride.
And automatically send it to those people that you've designated as your like contacts per se.
Yeah. And I think it is share my ride. Yeah.
And I use Uber all the time, and I'd love to echo my way. I have a lot. I live in like Northern Virginia, so there's a lot of cultural diversity. And so oftentimes there might be somebody who doesn't speak as well as, you know, as good as of English. Duh, that doesn't even, like, as I'm doing right now. But really, I think it's just important. Number one, I always, and I don't care. I've had one woman give me a hard time about me asking their name. And first thing I do, open the door, say, hi, what's your name? They always say, and because no one's going to know the other person if it's like if it's not my person. And so I always say, hi, what's your name? They say their name. And then I say, hi, thanks, Candace. And then I just, you know, say my name so that we're both on the same page. And then we, again, once in a while, if it's been a minute then since I ordered it, so it's like 0 minutes away, I'll call them because I'm like, I'm not going to, you know, just texting for me. I have no idea if they, you know, they see it, they don't, that drives me crazy. So I just try and pick up the phone and call. This doesn't happen often, but you know, I'm like, hey, I'm in front of this wherever I'm blind. I've got a cane with me. I'm wearing whatever. But you know, that's really the only time I would share with them. And then again, here I have a lot of times the same driver. So, but I use Uber constantly.
Well, and that exactly what Candace said is ask their name. And like I said, I have one person who wouldn't give me their name. And, but for the most part, they are like, they'll say their name and they say, oh, hi, I'm Maria. Or they say, are you Maria? And I'll say, yes. Because then, you know, for sure they're there to pick you up. So it's, it just takes a lot of getting used to. I actually was doing Uber with another person, to get used to it. And he's totally blind and he used it all the time. And I was thinking, he's not afraid to use it. Why? You know, then I shouldn't be afraid to use it. But you know, the language can be a barrier. I was going to mention that too. And then you just, you know, you just got to get in there and just, you know, just own it. Let's own it. Have the confidence that, you know, I'm going to get somewhere on my own, independently. And you do it a few times. It's the taste of freedom. It really is.
And then also having the courage to say, I mean, because you have to, because when you get to your destination, you've got to be able to say, so the building that I want, do you see the address right there? Do you see the door? Is it out your window? Is it out my, you know, the passenger side? And very clear questions. And you're usually really, really helpful with that too. And then I say, I cannot and I will not get out until I'm sure that we're at the right place. And so, and they're like, oh, like kind of puts a little fire under them to say, oh yeah, you're right. I don't want you getting out the wrong place.
Yeah. Yeah. Line me up with the door. Yep. You know, line me up.
Always. If it's a place you've never been before, you always ask for guidance.
And I point too sometimes like, okay, this window, correct? Yeah. Like, uh-huh. I'm like, no, I need to hear you say this window this way, right? Out my window. And they're like, yes. I said, okay. And so you can see the door and the sidewalk, and they confirm it, because that's the last thing I want.
Yeah. Or and they will drive up to your house and they'll be across the street. And I'm like, no. And I'll know, because that's the only car running and I'm on a kind of tight street. I go, no, you need to come over here. Because I don't know if a car's going to come barreling down my street, but the same thing in a parking lot, and they kind of go across, you know, not along the edge of the storefronts. I'm like, you need to come over, you know, I'm doing the, you know, U-turn signal. Like, you need to come over here. And they sometimes like, what's wrong with you, lady? But I'm like, no, I'm not going to take the chance and walk across where there's cars. So it kind of comes down to that, you know, ask for what you need. And they're in the business of service, and they should be doing that. So you get used to it.
I can honestly say I've taken hundreds of rides and I've never had one single problem. So not even one. So
good track record.
Yeah. I literally had
not just in Florida. I use them all over the place. Philadelphia, New York, Boston.
Before we turn off the recording, I'm just curious, where is the LHON convention going to be this year?
Charlotte,
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Glad you asked. Charlotte, North Carolina, June 28th. Do you have any more information 1st. On
rooms and stuff? No.
That probably is going to be coming out very, very soon. They usually get that information out fairly early because they want people to get, you know, start booking rooms. And always remember, you can book a room and you can always cancel it later, because once room blocks are full, they get full unless they can get some more open. But please, you guys, mark your calendars, June 28th through July 1st. June 28th, I believe, I'm assuming that's the Thursday. We start with a meet and greet that evening, and we have conference on Friday, and most likely, you know, half to three quarter days Saturday.
Call Emily.
And so Charlotte, North Carolina, circle those dates, highlight whatever you need to do, because I expect all yes to be there. This is Maria, by the way.
It was July 1st at the end of the conference.
Which I believe is less a crime is July 1st Saturday. I think it is.
Saturday, yep.
Okay, yeah. It will end on Saturday. And most people fly out on Sunday. So, and if, you know, if you need be, you know, fly out Saturday, you know, afternoon after the conference. But as some of y'all know, Saturday's the night that we, you know, one of the nights we all get together and have a good time. Getting, as somebody had mentioned, Andy mentioned in his intro, is it's a time and a place for you to meet others who are affected, others who are carriers, sighted supporters, family members, in person. And there really is nothing like it. It's just a really wonderful experience. Many of the people on this call could give their, experience and, so if you can make it, it's going to be worth your while. And that's my goal for this year, is to have a super inclusive and incredible conference for y'all, with Jessica Loomer, and I are going to be, you know, working hard on it, and Lissa.
And Mary, the 28th is the Wednesday. So the conference will be the
I'm sorry. Is it the Wednesday?
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. Yeah, then the 29th. Yeah. I'm sorry.
29th the, you know, the first of the actual
20. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So
I looked at a calendar to be sure. I can.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. So the 29th, I'm sorry, is Thursday. And like I said, so it, starts that evening with a meet and greet, where folks are kind of coming in. We all, you know, kind of, it's a meet and greet along with UMDF. But it's a chance to kind of see people that you haven't seen for years, or to meet people you've only heard or seen on Zoom, or to meet people who are just brand new to the LHON community and haven't met or, you know, heard anybody. So it's a great way to kick off this conference.
just to kind of clarify on the dates, for those of you who see communications from UMDF, there's a three-ring circus going on. So UMDF is conducting a scientific and medical meeting, and they kick that off on the 28th. And so they're doing scientific and medical 28th, 29th, 30th, and then some of the doctors stick around till the first with the patients. And then the patients get started the next day on the 29th. So when they post the dates about the UMDF symposium, it will say 28th till the 1st, and there's stuff happening the 28th till the 1st, but the people here are coming for the patient and the community and the LHON stuff, and that doesn't get going until the evening of the 29th and then all day Friday and most of the day Saturday. So that's part of why the confusion about dates. Yep, you'll see both. So no, but I mean, it's, and it's good to bring it up because people are going to see the UMDF communication, and it's just good to know that that's why it's happening. It's because the whole thing encompasses those days, but our part starts on the 29th and then runs through the 30th and the 1st. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Perfect.
And you could book for those nights or what?
I'm sorry. Say again.
Will they let us just book for those nights for the community, all that stuff?
Yeah. You typically, you can book Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, Wednesday. You know, if you fly in early, you may be paying a different rate. It's hard to say until they actually put out the hotel information. But
the
they
two
do
things are disassociated. They're disassociated. Yeah. Like you do two different things. You book your room. And you do that with the hotel, and there's a conference rate, which has been negotiated by UMDF, but UMDF is not party to that transaction. Yep. So you want to book your room at the conference rate while those rooms are available, but that's a transaction between you and the hotel. Then separately, you want to register for the conference, and that's a transaction between each individual and UMDF, if that makes sense.
Is there a fee for the registration or no?
There's a fee for the registration, and UMDF sets up the fee, but there's two things to know about the fee. One is it's the point of it is to cover the breakfast, lunches, snacks, the banquet. So there's no like charge to attend. It's just covering the costs, and it's a, you know, discounted rate, and it's inclusive, and it'll spell it all out, what's all being included. But if you have any idea what conference, what hotel, like if you've gone to NFB, it's different. You register at a really low rate, but then you have to pay for your meals. This is an inclusive, and you're pretty much taken care of once you get there. And that's included in the fee. The other issue is that there are scholarships available. And sometimes you can apply for a scholarship if the cost is problematic. And it's not like everyone should do that because it's coming out of nonprofit organization funding, which could be used for other things. But if the travel costs are getting in your way, there are scholarships and you can apply for those, and those can take away the cost of the fee, and it can sometimes help defray some travel costs, and those should the application for that. I think Maria, isn't that this month or next month?
Yes, it's coming. I believe the scholarships applications are going to be launched next week. So we'll be sure to get that information out on the Facebook page.
They don't, you know, I do get the UDMF, you know, I do get from them. So it's like, you know, trying to figure out which email I should be looking for, which, you know.
Sure. Yeah. They may make that announcement too. But we'll always try to, you know, funnel what's applicable to the LHON folks, into the Facebook pages. And of course, Lissa will have the LHON org emails monthly and things like that. So, yeah. But,
I didn't know if the registration, if that has to register everybody that's going to the conference, you know, like if you're bringing your family, you know, do you have to register everybody into
yes.
it?
Yep. Yes. Everyone has to register because they need a, you know, a seat for everybody, for the banquet. They need to, you know, like I said, for food. And of course we need to know how many seats at the conference itself, that we need to have. So yeah, every family member needs to register.
If they're attending the conference and eating meals within the conference. I mean, there have been cases, for instance, where one person, I remember we had one speaker at the conference in Seattle and her husband was there running around chasing their young child and they didn't come into the room at all and they didn't eat with the group and that's their choice. It's not like someone standing guard over the person, you know, going, oh my gosh, this person is with you. You're in trouble, you know, but it's, but then again, as Maria said, if the person, you know, so much of what happens with LHON is it's a family situation and family members generally benefit from being at the conference together. And it's not just for the people that are affected. It's for loved ones who are there with them. And thus it's best if those people register and are part of the process, if that all makes sense.
So this would be a good time to be looking at airfare for like the 28th arrive and Sunday.
Lot of people wouldn't arrive on the 28th. A lot of people might fly in on the 29th, depending on, you know, where you are. Maria, I don't know what time on Thursday you're going to kick it off, but like if someone's coming like Rob from Michigan to Charlottesville, I mean, if it, like last year we started at what, four? Paul, was your talk, are you and Jerry still on? You guys were the kickoff speakers. Yeah, you're still here, Paul and Jerry. Yeah. Do you remember, weren't you guys at like 4 o'clock?
I think they were four.
Okay.
4 o'clock, Paul.
And that was the first.
Yeah,
and,
we were about 4 o'clock.
And that was the first official activity, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you do a Friday morning.
Yeah. So there was a voice of the patient, session, which Paul Laurie was part of. So, you know, many of us went in to support him in that session and that was at 4:00. And then the, meet and greet, I believe. I can't remember the time, Lissa, but, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock type of thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you flew in the morning, you're more than fine, more than fine.
But if someone's coming in from the West Coast and wants to be there, that might, you know, it depends. Yeah. It just depends.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you want to get a little more acclimated on time and you can pull off the vacation day or whatnot, you know, coming on Wednesday.
Yeah. Day at the beach.
Do you know what the schedule is for the speakers for that, for the conference yet, or has that been hammered out?
Not yet. Has not been hammered out.
But it'll be great, won't it, Maria and Jessica?
It's going to be so great. It's going to be so great.
So good. So good.
Last year was awesome. You guys did a great job.
It was excellent.
Thank you.
So, yes, thank you so much.
Blind Girls Tag Team.
Run by two blind girls. Mm-hmm. So we're putting the wheels on the ground and we're going to be rolling hard on putting this together, starting, you know, yesterday. So, but as soon as we have ideas on, you know, different sessions that we're going to have going, and a lot of things have to be confirmed. I mean, a lot of things have to be confirmed. A lot of, you know, organizing has to be done for sessions and times of speakers and who's available. You know, we always do sneak peeks on the sessions. So to give you kind of a little bit of a hint and create a little buzz on, you know, what you can expect. It's going to be great.
But I think it's worth saying that we've been doing this since 2013 uninterrupted except for COVID. And the reality is the content, I think people would agree the content's been great and this year will be the same. And when you ask anyone what was the benefit of it, they never tell you it was the content. It was what everyone's just saying. It's the people you meet and the conversations you have and the connections you walk away with. And, but there will be great content, but don't hold your breath waiting for the content. Choose to come because it will be a great use of a couple of days of your life.
Yeah. And what we do create a private Facebook group. If you're on Facebook, that we, once we know and you've registered as an attendee, we add you to that group. So you start to see who's going and we start the fodder and the conversation in the group. So, and that's where a lot of the buzz and the info gets put. So you start to see who's going and, you know, start knowing, you know, knowing names. And, so yeah. So we do, you know, drive it so that you guys are as well informed as possible to the minute you get there. And yeah.
Will they be having the exhibit hall like they did in the last 2 years? Exhibit hall?
More than likely. I mean, that's UMDF really puts that on. It was in charge of that part of it, but, how it will be set up. It seems to be different every year. Sometimes it's in a room. This last year it was in a kind of a foyer. Not sure what the logistics on that will be, but more than likely, yes, the UMDF, organizes that part.
A lot of that depends on the space they have at the hotel. So.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I have a question on another topic.
Go ahead, Megan.
No, go ahead.
Just so they know that we do usually have one dedicated room for the LHON conference. So when a lot of conferences, you're moving around from session to session and finding rooms at different ballrooms and things like that. One of the great things is we have a room starting Friday morning and that's our room. So once you know where it is, you're going to be very comfortable with knowing that's the room you always go to, you return to after lunch, you know, after a break, that's going to be our room. And that's how it's been every year. I don't expect it to change. So, that makes it really nice that we all stay together. We don't move around for sessions. There may be a chance there may be a session you'd want to go to that the UMDF is having, maybe about GenSight, maybe about Trinos Trials, and you will have to mosey over there and make your way back. For the most part, though, all of our content and sessions will be in one room for Friday and Saturday. So that sometimes people want to, that makes people a little more comfortable that they're not going to be having to move around in huge hotel ballrooms and things like that. So make it easy.
I guess we can move around, I guess, from the LHN. Yes. Conference yes. to like if I want to go see GenSight
absolutely more than welcome to go to any of the sessions that are provided be UMDF in their patient program or our program. And sometimes we have last year we actually did a combined session where UMDF and LHON actually did a combination session, and the UMDF folks who wanted to come came to our room, which was by design. And we did have a combined session with UMDF people and LHON folks. So, you know, there may be some more of that too. But we try and make it as easy as far as us trying to find rooms or getting to where we need to go. And again, by design, I will most likely try to have any combined sessions in our room where most of the UMDF folks have site and they can easily find it. So, but yes, hey, anyone can go to anything. Yes.
Does anyone need to sign up differently? Like if you do want to kind of go back and forth between UMDF sessions and LHON, is there a different cost versus just LHON? This is not a softball. I just have a question.
I don't believe so. No. I believe you. No, I don't believe so. Yeah, no.
No. And there was a time that we used to have an LHON thing that was shorter, and several years ago we just got too complicated and we just integrated everything and made the times comparable. And so that's, you may remember that from the past, but now it's all the same.
Yeah, we try to line up our sessions the same as UMDF sessions so that, you know, if it's 2 o'clock with us, if there's a 2 o'clock over with the patient program at UMDF, so you can easily slide back and forth.
And it used to be we didn't go to the banquet. We had a dinner someplace else, but that got too complicated. So now we do the banquet together, which was one of the big, you know, complicating factor. So again, we're sort of, it's all, the pricing is comparable because whatever you're doing, you're doing, it's the LHON program at the UMDF activity.
Yeah. Yeah. and we reserve tables at the banquet. So we all are sitting kind of in one section, depending on how many people are there. So yeah. So, and they're, so they're like rounds of 10 people maybe, but we're all in this, we're all next to each other in one area. So it's kind of nice. Then you kind of know you're kind of with, you know, our people, if you will. So, yeah. So those are just little things that we, you know, asked for, and they were more than willing to accommodate when we, did our conference last year. And, you know, by going by the good, the bad and the ugly of last year, we are even making better, you know, more changes and more asks so that we are, we can be, things can be more accessible and inclusive for us. Good questions, guys.
I do have a question that's outside of conference, if we have a second or no.
Go for it, Megan.
Yeah. So I am going to see Dr. Moster, and this is not a medical question at all, but I've seen doctors in California, New York, I don't know where else, Miami, I guess. Anything I should think about when going to Dr. Moster, or, you know, just my usual stunts?
He's a real nice guy, and he's easy to talk to and stuff.
Okay.
All right. Do you know how to get around Philadelphia?
Megan, who is he?
What was that?
Do you know how to get around Philadelphia?
I have family help.
Okay, good. It's real easy to walk around that whole neighborhood. It's sort of right in the middle of things. So it's nice and easy to walk if you're someone like me that prefers walking everywhere and just ping-ponging around from one person giving directions to another.
Awesome. And good parking and all that.
Oh, I don't get in cars.
Yeah. And what was the other question? I'm sorry.
I was just asking, who is he? Is he eye doctor or LHN plus or?
Dr. Mark Moster. He's at Wills Eye Hospital.
He's a neuro ophthalmologist.
Yes.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Well, with that, I think we'll go ahead. I know we're well past, but I want to go ahead and get the recording turned off. And once I do that, if folks would like to hang around and continue the conversation, you're welcome to. I may have to drop along with some others, but I encourage the conversation to continue as long as folks want it to. Before I wrap up the recording portion of the call, as always, I remind you all that we have these calls once a month, always the first Wednesday of the month, always the same time, which is 5 p.m. Pacific. Excuse me, sorry, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern here in the U.S. Looks like the next call will be February 1st. So the first, yes, February 1st, 2023. So look forward to that. I will get the recording turned off now.